Well, since we were talking about gambling, Adam, I've got a friendly wager for you.
Okay.
So there are four students, let's say. High school seniors, all of them. One's white, one's black, one Hispanic, and one Asian American. And all things being equal, who do you think is most likely to be admitted to a U.S. university?
Okay, all things being equal, grades, SATs, recommendations, extracurriculars.
Everything.
Everything.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, just going with the horrible, horrible stereotype that I do not believe is true, but I do perceive anecdotally to be true walking around the BU campus sometimes, I'm going to go ahead and say the Asian student.
Well, I mean, I can understand why you might make that guess, but it turns out that it's actually not the Asian American student. Because as you mentioned, walking around campus of, you know, not just Boston University, but one of the many elite colleges around here, you might wonder how that's even possible. But it turns out that researchers have found that whites are 3 times, Hispanics 6 times, and blacks 15 times as likely to be accepted at a U.S. university than Asian American students. Now, that's a little factoid that John Marcus wrote about in this weekend's Boston Globe magazine in an article entitled Competitive Disadvantage. John Marcus is here with us now. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
Really interesting article about how there may be, the bar might be being raised for Asian American students in higher education, particularly at elite universities. But John, just get us started. What evidence is there that this may be true?
Well, researchers at Princeton University looked at SAT scores of people of various races and found that Asians to be accepted to elite, meaning largely Ivy universities and doctoral level research universities in the top 50 of the U.S. News rankings, Asian students needed almost perfect SAT scores, much higher scores than blacks or whites or Hispanics to get into the same schools.
Okay, so there, and does that mean that this is not an official practice, though? I mean,
well,
can we determine causation based on that?
We can determine very few things about the university admissions process. It's a secret and mysterious process. University admissions offices say that they do not take race into account, at least not overtly or for reasons other than pure and good. But really, no one knows. And people who have worked in university admissions offices and left and spilled the beans have said that, yes, in fact, they look for Asians. You don't have to indicate your race on an admissions application. But what the disadvantage Asians have is that often it's evident from the name.
Okay, so in your reporting, you talked to Asian American parents here in our community, and what are they telling you and how they advise their kids on how to apply?
Well, it's interesting. One Asian parent that we spoke with in Brookline had actually changed her child's name, surname, to avoid this discrimination happening to him. There are a few ways, frankly, to avoid it. And again, universities refuse to admit that it's even happening. And in fact, Asians are admitted to universities like Boston University in proportions higher than their proportion of the population. Nonetheless, if they were admitted without race being taken into account, the proportion would be considerably higher.
So listeners, this is our talker today. The question of whether there's discrimination for Asian American students as they try and enter the elite universities in the United States. So are you an Asian American student or a parent? And have you gone through this process? And have you maybe thought, hey, the bar is higher for me? Did you hesitate, as John Marcus mentioned, when checking the box on your application form, worrying that if you indicated you're Asian American, that might make your chances worse? And a bigger question here, what does this say about the issues of meritocracy and fairness when it comes to university education in the United States? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. John, let me ask you, I was wondering about this today, that there's some numbers here that we've got. You put them in your reports, and I dug up some others. Recent classes, admitted classes at some top schools. Yale was a couple years ago 15.5% Asian American, Dartmouth 16%, Harvard 19%, Princeton 17%, and Asian Americans overall in Massachusetts and the United States about 5% of the population. So some do say already, based just on those numbers, that they are overrepresented.
And that's absolutely true. They are overrepresented. Massachusetts has a little bit of a higher proportion of Asians than the rest of the country. It's a little more than 5%. The rest of the country is a little bit under 5%. But critics of this say that it is possible to be both overrepresented and discriminated against, because if you remove those racial filters, as happened in California when voters refused to allow affirmative action to continue in university admissions, when you remove the racial filters, the proportion of Asians, and in California, Asians represent 13% of the population. Their proportion of enrollment at universities like University of California at Irvine went up to 53%. So they see that as evidence that if you admitted Asians without taking the race into account, they would represent a significantly higher proportion.
I ask this question because I wonder how much of what's going on there is and what's being perceived is just, how do I put it, I guess a false amplification of what might be a smaller problem. I mean, in other words, whether or not the stereotype is true, we do see a lot of Asian American kids being great achievers, and perhaps they're more likely to apply to this small, like, top tier of 50 schools, right? And so, if you have a high percentage of students applying to a small number of schools, you know, a lot of them are going to get rejected. So it might seem like, hey, me and all my friends who look like me, we're the ones getting rejected.
No, that's a perfectly valid point. So are any of these points, except they're all speculation because university admissions processes are such a secret. And in fact, what my editor and I used to go back and forth on when we were putting the story together is, imagine being them. You've worked that hard. We picked up on this story after the winter of controversy about the Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother book.
Right.
And the stereotype that Asian parents in particular push their kids to be significantly more academically competitive than other students. Now, whether that's true or not, you get to the admissions process, which happened at the beginning of this month, was the week that the acceptance emails go out. And these kids find that they're shut out when students who you asked the question earlier, all things being equal. All things aren't equal. Students with lesser credentials of other races are being admitted to these universities when Asians aren't.
Well, I want to play a little bit of tape here. It's from a YouTube video that went viral last month, so a lot of people may have seen it. And in it is a white student at UCLA, because you'd mentioned the University of California system a few minutes ago. And she's ranting in a highly racialized way about Asian American students at UCLA. Let's listen to a little bit of what she says.
These hordes of Asian people that UCLA accepts into our school every single year, which is fine. But if you're going to come to UCLA, then use American manners.
Well, I want to introduce another voice to respond to that into our conversation. Sam Musius, he is a professor of higher education and Asian American studies at UMass Boston, and he joins us now. Professor Musius, welcome to Radio Boston.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So that piece of tape is, pretty extreme, but as I said, a lot of people saw it. The student later apologized and actually withdrew from UCLA. But we wanted to play it because of this perception. I mean, when she says, quote, these hordes of Asian American people that UCLA accepts to our school. I mean, when did it become acceptable for a certain group of people in the United States to consider a school theirs?
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. I mean, we have this country has a long history of sort of otherizing people who are different, like, you know, racial minorities, and a history of discriminating against and otherizing Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders, and I think that that's the sentiment that she was conveying there. That recent Boston Globe article that was printed about this very issue, I said that, you know, if in fact, institutions are using race to exclude Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders, then it very well could be partially due to this fear that they're taking over spots at, you know, the best institutions of higher education in the country. And I think, you know, I don't think that we can rule that out.
Professor Musius, you're in the academic world right now, and what would you say is the purpose of an institution of higher education here? I mean, is it to admit the best, most qualified students regardless of any other factors? Or is it to create a school environment and culture that, nurtures a whole cross-section of talented kids? I mean, it seems like these are two things that are in tension surrounding this issue on Asian American students.
Well, that's a good question. We could probably talk for an hour just about that. I think the answer, at least from my perspective, is all of the above. You know, higher education has, in part, a mission to provide opportunity to everyone who chooses to take advantage of it. It has a role in rewarding people who work hard. It has a role in creating college graduates who can function effectively in a diverse workforce once they graduate. So I think sometimes these things are at odds. I don't know if I would necessarily argue that that's the case here.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely when it comes to, you know, the issue of affirmative action, oftentimes when we talk about affirmative action, the discussion revolves around, you know, can we not admit students who have better credentials so that we can achieve a diverse student body on our campuses so that students can learn to interact well and function effectively with people from other racial and ethnic groups.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to be clear, though, this is a very different case because at these institutions in question, you know, we're talking about a student body that might be 20% to 40% Asian American and Pacific Islander. So I don't think that in these cases we're necessarily jeopardizing any kind of learning environment.
John Marcus, let me ask you about one issue that your piece raised very clearly, I think, was that what role might Asian American families and students play in the fact that, I mean, we're talking about those, the top tier, the top 50, essentially, that there's so much focus on getting into those particular schools, whereas there are, you know, hundreds of excellent other liberal arts colleges and universities where maybe there isn't such an issue about the bar being raised for Asian American students.
But why shouldn't they? If they're qualified to enter those schools, if I had been qualified to apply to Harvard, I would have applied to Harvard. These kids are qualified to apply to Harvard, and they apparently are not getting in proportion to the numbers that apply.
Mm. And it's interesting because in 2006, I believe, the National Association for College Admissions Counseling, I mean, this is such an issue that they actually even had a panel in a conference they had
about
Asians.
It was called Too Many Asians. And this is an issue that is of concern to them, the more exposure it receives. It's received significant exposure in Canada, much more than here, where there's also a large Asian population and where white students told a magazine called Maclean's for a story called Too Asian that they wouldn't go to the University of Toronto because there were too many Asians, and the white students felt that was an indication that they'd have to work too hard.
Let's take a bunch of calls here. We got a lot of people on the line. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We are talking about Asian American students and whether or not the bar is being raised for them in terms of getting into elite colleges and universities and what that means for higher education. Sean is calling from Salem. Welcome to Radio Boston, Sean.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. What's your thought?
Well, I just had kind of an open-ended comment. In this country, we're always kind of told that if you work really, really hard, you can be anything you want, get anywhere you want, and that college is kind of the key to everything. And I just had it just kind of bothers me a little bit what this says about our American values when someone, or a group in this case, does exactly that. They work really hard, they overachieve, and then there's a backlash against that very success. But, you know, it just seems a little weird to me that there would be this kind of viciousness about it. If in other cases where someone's performing better than you, perhaps, I mean, it's in my mind kind of a motivation for me to work harder to try to get where they are.
There's a longstanding American mythology that, as you say, if you're smart enough and work hard enough, you can go anywhere you want. That may never have been true. It's certainly not true now. Universities have abandoned what's called need-blind admission. They consider your wealth and ability to pay when they consider admitting you, most of them. There are very few left, very few universities that can afford to be need-blind. If you are a legacy, that is a child of an alumnus or a significant donor, you are 45% more likely to be admitted to a private university. Public universities aren't supposed to do that, but they have. And the University of Illinois was caught admitting children of politically well-connected people, and it cost the chancellor and the president of the University of Illinois their jobs. Whether that's happening at other public universities is hard to say. So your point is well taken. If it was ever true, it isn't true now.
Let's get another call in here. Yuchi's calling from Lexington. You're on the air, Yuchi.
Oh, hi. I'm a retired professor from Harvard University. I taught there for 46 years, and I did serve on the admission committee of Harvard for a while. So I think I can provide another aspect of this issue about Asian American admission.
Would love to hear it. So, I mean, on the admissions committee, what factors were they looking
at? Well, okay. Lots of people believe that if you have good academic scores, perfect SATs, you ought to get admitted. But that's not really true. College admission committee, at least at the time when I was serving at Harvard, it has something like 20-some factors you consider, including whether your father or mother went to Harvard as an alumni or not, and how active you were in the alumni committee. These factors are officially acknowledged, even by the Department of Education. So the fact that you have a 800 score only means on one dimension you are very good. On the 20 other dimensions, you may not be comparable. So, but lots of parents, of course, believe, and particularly Asian parents, because of the cultural tradition, which says, you know, because all advancement in Asia are based on examinations. If you do an exam, pass exam well, you get promoted.
But you, Chief, if I might say, it's not just in Asia. I mean, in America here, the message, especially if you're an immigrant, is that if you work hard, you study hard, and your kids do the same, you will make it. I mean, that's the whole concept of the meritocracy.
This is true. I myself, as an example, I came here 62 years ago, and with nothing. And I can say I lived the American dream. I made it. But all I want to point out is that admission, college admission, the SAT score, academic score, is only one of the many factors people consider admitting.
So, Yuchi, what would you tell parents then who throw up their hands, and students who throw up their hands and say, what else can I do?
Get their student be more and not just one-dimensional, only excel the academic scores. Participate in sports, volunteer in public service, and all kinds of other things. Those are things that admission committee also looks at.
Yuchi, thank you so much for your call. Professor Musius and John Marcus, both of you, please feel free to chime in here. I mean, so it's a tough thing to tell parents you've already worked so hard, and yet, you know, you've got to work even harder. And as you're saying, John Marcus, the perfect scores just aren't good enough. How much more can a kid do, essentially, I guess I'm wondering?
It's a very good question, and it arises not just for Asian kids but for any kids. 35,000 students, applicants, were turned away from Harvard this year. They took 6%. Your chances, you asked earlier in your gambling piece about the odds, are less than 1 in 10 of getting into Harvard. You need to stand out from the pack. The number of people that have perfect SAT scores who apply to Harvard is significant. Some admissions directors say off the record that, and this is probably just as much a stereotype as any other, that they wonder about the ability of Asian Americans culturally to innovate and be creative. Again, probably based on a stereotype. But nonetheless, that's another factor that they look at the admissions in the admissions process. What the gentleman who served at Harvard mentioned too about, you know, he was confirming what I mentioned earlier about the fact that legacy students get greater points, and that's less likely. You know, when we talk about Asian populations, especially in the Boston area, people tend to think about middle and upper class Asians in the western suburbs, places like Brookline, where 17% of the high school students are Asian American. But in Massachusetts, that also includes Southeast Asian recent immigrants, first in their family, first generation to go to college. These kids, too, are having the door slammed in their face for pretty much the same reason. They don't have the opportunity to be the children of alumni or large donors.
Let's get one more call in here. Go ahead, Professor Musius.
Just a few things. One is the admissions decisions obviously are very complex, and that's one of the things that the studies do not take into account, because they are looking at test scores, but they're not looking at things like participation in extracurricular activities and pre-college. To go back to John's point, that's critical. When we're talking about Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders, we're lumping international Asians who tend to have higher levels of success because they come here for school with Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders. We're lumping in 30 to 40 different ethnic groups into one category. And the lower income Southeast Asian first generation students that, that John was talking about, those are the ones who suffer the most because they don't have the resources that other groups do.
Right. I think that's an interesting point to make, is that it's not just sort of those Asian American communities in the upper middle class suburbs around Boston.
Yeah, right, right. And just which leads me to my last point, which is when we have these conversations a lot of time, you know, we talk about meritocracy and you got the higher score, so you should get the slot. But the reality is that, you know, there is no equal playing field. People go to different K-12 schools with different levels of resources. And so this is a very very complicated you know, a complicated process if we think about all of the factors that, that are considered in terms of, you know, leading to one having certain credentials once they get out of high school.
Let's take one last call here. Ocean is calling from Boston. You're on the air, Ocean.
Hi, yeah. I think number one, we should be really careful about the future. That would be face a global competition, not just USA. Number two, I think the mom, the no tiger mom, we should let the children doing what they love, doing what they're good at, because being creativity, being able to solve a problem, be useful for the future society is way more important than just the GPA.
Ocean, and thank you so much for your call. I'm sorry to cut you off, but I just got a little bit of time left, and I want to turn that back to John Marcus and Sam Musius, because in a way she touches what I think is one at the heart of the issue here. We mentioned it before, but really this difficult situation where it seems like a group of Americans have strived, and now they're being told you've actually done too well, as if that such a thing is possible in the United States. So how do we balance this push for meritocracy and fairness, as Ocean says, when we're living in a world where not just here in Boston, but over there in Beijing are really the people we should be looking to?
That's a very good question. The obvious analogy is with Jewish Americans at the beginning of the 20th century who for whom there were quotas at the Ivy League schools. What do you do about it? Well, what Jewish Americans did was start their own university. And what Asian Americans might do is another question. One thing they might do is build high-level universities in places like China, which is what's happening now, where students who once studied in the United States and might have stayed here and contributed to the economy now won't have to do it.
Professor Sam Musius, last word goes to you.
Okay. Well, I guess the last thing I was just going to say with regard to, in response to your last question, was that you know, the pressure to do well that these students face is in part created by society, in part created by you know, this stereotype that all Asian Americans do well. So it's sort of a major disservice in many ways that these expectations, we create these expectations, and then, like you said, conclude that the students just did too well when that's what they were being told to do all along.
Sam Musius is professor of higher education and Asian American studies at UMass Boston. Professor Musius, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And John Marcus wrote about higher education and Asian American students in the Boston Globe magazine. He also writes on higher ed for the Times of London and other numerous publications, including the New York Times. John Marcus, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
After a quick break, Boston's newly minted Pulitzer Prize winner, Sebastian Smee, on his vivid and exuberant writing about art. Stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Adam Ragusea. This is Radio Boston.